5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen of the AFN, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Navies. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Merkulia from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring effort. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
Traditionally, Alaska's native peoples, Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts, were custodians and caretakers of the land they and their ancestors occupied and used, going where the fish and game were plentiful and survival needs could be met. Formal title to land, pieces of paper indicating ownership, was not necessary. There were no institutions to manage and develop the resources of the land. No corporations documented by the Securities and Exchange Commission. But with the passage of the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, ANCSA, on December 18, 1971, those traditional, internally recognized and validated means of custodianship were congressionally replaced with the American business corporate structure. Under the terms of the Land Claims Settlement Act, the $962.5 million and 44 million acres of land offered in exchange for relinquishing Aboriginal claims were to be distributed and managed by profit-making entities, corporations. 12 corporations in-state, largely created along ethnic divisions, plus the option of a 13th corporation for Alaska Natives living outside of state, and village corporations as well, over 200 of them, though villages could decide whether to pursue profit or non-profit status. At the time the Act passed, shortly before Christmas 1971, there were jokes, as there still are, about the Brooks Brothers native, the three-piece Eskimo. But the corporations created under the Act differ significantly from Exxon and IBM and others, and that every shareholder, every person who was one-fourth or more Indian, Eskimo, or Aleut, born before the Act was signed into law and enrolled, automatically received 100 shares of stock in both their regional and village corporations if they were enrolled to a village. It was a democratic way of entering into the corporate mainstream, and in that sense of equality for all shareholders, the corporation had precedence in traditional Native society, where, for example, a whale would be shared with all members of the community. In this program, the third in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale, Native leaders and others involved with the framing of the land claim settlement give some of their thoughts on the corporate concept and how well that mechanism works for dividing the benefits of ANCSA, the whale.
Dividing the mock top is the way it's always been. Dividing the mock top between family and friends. We're sailing towards the future, so we're anchored in the past. Reaching our tradition, our way.
In 1966, while president of the Cook Inlet Native Association, Emil Nadi became the first president of the Alaska Federation of Natives. He made frequent trips to Washington, D.C. to work on land claims legislation, including the concept of village and regional corporations.
I think Congress's reason for doing that was a failure, I think, of the reservation system. The fact that termination had been tried and was not working. And so they were looking for a new way to solve the, quote, Indian problem. And the experiment here is to get people involved in the economic system. You know, what better way than to get people involved all the way through from the villages to the regions, and you're involved with the SEC and attorneys and accountants, and every year they're all required to file taxes and become concerned about stock ownership, not only in the village but in the region, and the value of the stock and the budgets. And it's a great method, I think, to get people into the mainstream. And I think that's Congress's intent.
Economist Lee Gorsuch, now executive director of the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research, would agree with Noddy.
It certainly took the form of the normal corporation with the capital as the mechanism by which these resources would be distributed as benefits to the individuals. So I think the answer is yes, essentially. The form of the Native Claim Settlement Act is consistent with all the corporate laws and the capitalistic system that's present in the United States. And I recall when Congressman Aspinall, who was a very powerful figure in the House of Representatives, had said that he wasn't about to attempt to rewrite all the corporate laws in the United States for the benefit of the Alaska Native population. And if they wanted the money and the land, they'd have to receive it through the existing laws that have been set up for corporations. And that's essentially how it took place. I don't recall any serious discussions about alternatives to that, such as using the traditional councils or the IRAs or anything of that sort. And there also seemed to be a general attitude among the leadership that what they were really asking for was an opportunity to become a participant in the mainstream, and clearly the corporations in the corporate form were the best understood by all the advisors and consultants who were working with the Native corporations. So I think familiarity and experience was one of the strong factors that led to the acceptance of the corporate form as the means by which the land and money would be received and managed.
State Senator John Sackett, chairman of the board for Doyon Limited, the Native regional corporation created by the Act for the Interior Athabascan Indians, guided his corporation into that mainstream.
I favored the settlement that we have now, which is unique in the sense that it's not the traditional method of either creating reservations or having a cash settlement that would be distributed to everyone all at one time.
Sackett served as chairman and president of the board of Doyon Limited for that corporation's first 4.5 years. It was his responsibility to transform the Tanana Chiefs Conference into the state's potentially largest private landowner.
The challenge of having a large corporation created overnight versus, say, myself as an individual starting from a small business and then through a number of years trying to develop into a larger corporation. We didn't have that choice. We were stuck with a large corporation and had to think as a large corporation. I suppose that was the greatest challenge to me. The first couple of years, I think it was a great learning process for everybody, not only for myself, but for all the different regions and all the different corporations. And then you had all the different village corporations learning too. I think that was challenging, trying to learn and not make major substantive mistakes at the same time.
Inevitably, mistakes, large financial ones, have been made. Within the past 10 years, ANCSA's first decade, there have been corporations verging on dissolution and others doing very well. Some have opulent offices in buildings owned by the corporation and distribute flashy annual reports touting their achievements, while others apologize to shareholders for their losses and promise better years ahead. Roger Lang, a past president of AFN, is on the board of directors of Sea Alaska Regional Corporation, the first Native corporation to make the Fortune 1000, and is president of the Alaska Native Foundation, which provides technical assistance for villages.
You've got to realize what we've gone through, see? The first 3 years that we were in existence, we had to do enrollment, and the corporations did enrollment. I mean, they had to do village selections, and there was 18 months to do that, and you had to do regional selections, and there was a year to do that. And none of that crap is what normal corporations have to do. that's 3 years out of your corporate life. And the need for leadership at that time was a little different than it was now. As a result was that most corporations at the regional level, anyhow, became kind of conservative in the use of their money, and they didn't do much in the business world or business ventures. But once all of that necessary crap was over, then we could get down to being corporations. And I would imagine that out of the 10 years that have passed, that somewhere between 4.5 and 5 years have been completely devoted to being corporations. And even of those 4.5 or 5 years, the other factors, the social needs of the people that you represent, are there, and you can't ever erase those from your considerations.
Lang is not alone in his thinking. For the past few years, a number of Native leaders have been discussing other ways of looking at the corporation, not just as an entity for generating capital, but for retaining cultural identity as well.
But there are troubles beyond the mountain. Indian drum that you can't hear. There are drums beyond the mountain, and they're getting mighty near.
Willie Hensley, founder of the Northwest Alaska Native Association, former state legislator, past president of the AFN, current chairman of United Bank Alaska, and president of NANA Development Corporation, in a keynote speech to the 1980 convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives.
The land which represents our spiritual homeland now rests in a corporation, a soulless entity that is designed for commercial purposes. As you know, this was not a usual settlement. Among the Indians, they had a tribal government that was responsible for the survival of the people, of their language, and of their culture, and only incidentally were involved in business. Unfortunately, our identity as a people, our tribal soul, has an uneasy resting place. If we think that our corporations exist just for corporate purposes, then we have a problem.
Charlie Edwardson Jr. of Barrow, Etah, an early leader in the statewide land claims movement, describes Native corporations this way.
Nobody else can have any more than what each and every one of us have. And this criteria alone is a very revolutionary technique for the extended life of the Alaska Native people. And no place else in the world has a design built in with a birthright to capital ever been developed in the world at this time. And so it is wrong in the context to evaluate these corporations, which are 12 regional corporations, from the archaic old American model.
Willie Hensley.
If we play the game that Congress intended to, then we're going to lose it. All I'm saying is that, sure, you know, we understand what's going on. I mean, we understand, you know, what a corporation is, you know, and what it does, but let's not get engulfed by it, right? And I'm saying that with other institutions as well, you see. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, see, the solution that I see is right for everybody. In fact, the intriguing thing about the settlement is that, you know, you can approach it the way you want and still be right. It depends on what your people want.
You've been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, The First 10 Years, the third program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to the Historical Tape Collection of the University of Alaska Archives, KUAC-FM, and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, the Tunic Dance Group of Barrow, and Peter Lafarge, Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, Star Route Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska 99701.